Okay, clogged pores. I've had it. You think I don't notice your pesky blackheads? It's all I see. Why else would I be dodging photos, yelling back up, zoom out, not so close? But now, I've got Biore Deep Cleansing Charcoal Pore Strips. With natural charcoal, they pluck out stubborn dirt, oil, and even blackheads in just one strip. So go ahead, snap away. With Biore, I have finally found the skin of my dreams. Biore, free your pores.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Backline Report. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres, and every week I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Alvader. Fred, hi, how are you today?
I'm great, Carlos. Raise your glass, because on this date, 1933, Prohibition formally ended. We should all raise a glass to that and have a little snort. The college football playoffs chose Alabama over my beloved Buckeyes for the final spot in the college football playoffs, and will have to be satisfied to kick some USC Trojan butt in the Cotton Bowl. Maybe you can go over there, Carlos, and root for the Bucks for me, okay? The committee showed absolutely no love for the Big Ten this year and chose the one-loss Crimson Tide over the Big Ten champs with two losses. That Iowa loss really cost the Buckeyes this year. Oh, well, there's always next year. Is it time for the Tribe to start spring training yet? Oh, well. Hey, forget football and baseball. The golf season's winding down. We just have one more show left in 2017. Next week, we're going to count down the biggest golf stories of 2017. And our good buddy, Kieran Clark, right from Scotland, is going to join us. But tonight, we have news about Tiger Woods, Rory McIlroy, Ricky Fowler, and so much more. So, Carlos, let's go.
I don't know, but I have this hunch that Tiger Woods might be part of our show next week. So I don't know. It's just a hunch.
I think it's going to be a highlight. Yeah, I do.
I don't know how he'll be somewhere. Yeah. Somewhere around there.
Yeah.
But like you said, you know, 1933 was when Prohibition was done.
December 5th, 1933. That's correct.
Okay, so I'm going to tell you that in December 5, 67 years ago, Jerry Lansdowne Watkins, better known as Lanny Watkins, who won the PGA Championship in 1977, was born. So happy birthday to Lanny Watkins and others.
There you go.
Celebrated birthdays this past week were Lee Trevino, who turned 78, and Jay Haas Sr., who turned 64. So there you have it, Lanny Watkins today.
You used to do that. We quit doing that. You used to do the birthdays, and we quit doing that. All right.
Yes. There you go. And trying to break some of Lanny. Those good stuff.
Lanny was one of my favorite players. I used to love watching Lanny Watkins when he played back in the day. He was so aggressive, fired at every pin. He was fast. I loved the way he played. I loved to watch him. He was so competitive.
So, yeah, and he's also one of the good guys there on the PGA. But anyway, let's go now, as usual. We have a VIG, very important guest of the week, and he's a friend of the show, Mike Fay. You don't want to miss that. But we're going to start with the week in backspin, as we usually do. And, of course, we have to start with, Fred, I felt so sorry for Charlie Hoffman, even for Ricky Fowler, everyone, Justin Thomas. It doesn't matter what Charlie Hoffman did on Friday, that he went berserk and did a 10-under. The questions they made was, hey, how Tiger was playing? What you think about Tiger? And, hey, how about my round? You know, I had a pretty good round, but it was incredible. The coverage, even though he didn't win, was just to see that on Friday, at some point, Tiger was or ever so slightly on top. It has been, I think, the highlight of the weekend. What do you think about the Hero World Challenge and what happened there?
Well, you're exactly right, Carlos. That was the major storyline, was Tiger returning. And Ricky Fowler won the big money shot 11 under par 61, had a 59 watch going. He birdied 8 holes on the front 9. he won all the big money, but Tiger Woods got all the attention. In his first competitive golf in nearly a year, Tiger impressed everyone. I'm talking about everyone, even the naysayers, with rounds of 69, 68, 65, 68. He started strong in the first few rounds, faltered a little bit in the third round, but came back with a solid 68 on Sunday, even though he three-putted the last for bogey. When you compare the numbers from last year to this year, he had less birdies and double bogeys with more pars. Most impressive was the length and overall accuracy of his driver. I mean, it was almost scary long and scary straight. He showed some scoring consistency with 3 rounds in the 60s and appeared to be swinging and walking pain-free. Carlos, my question to you, should we really get that excited about Tiger Woods' performance in this silly season event? And does this bode well for 2018 in his quest to win more major championships?
You know what? I can't help to be excited, really. I can't. Like you, I was cautiously excited about him, because we have already seen so much about him coming back and then going back down. Yes, I am, because what we saw there, I mean, he enjoyed a fine return to competitive action there following that 10-month layoff after, and save for a poor round where he played solidly and finished tied for 9th, it was his best PGA Tour finish since 2013. I mean, we saw everything that we needed to see from him. And even Butch Hartman said, I like the way that he's swinging the ball. He's really, really swinging really smooth. He looked very comfortable. One of the things that I wanted to see, and that I know we talked about this, and we have talked at large, is his mental attitude towards that. How would he react when he would get in trouble? And we saw it over and over again that he was not fazed by it. I mean, he would do a bogey and he would come back and maybe do a birdie, or just not go with another bogey, or go like he had been doing before when he would just go down that hole and just not get back on it. I mean, if it wouldn't have been for that opening 940 on Saturday that derailed him of any chance for that, what could have been a Cinderella story that would stand out? I mean, he really finished well. It was a spirited finish on Sunday, and it provided the final snapshot of what I think we are going to be seeing. I think there was a little rust there, but if he keeps building on that confidence that I'm sure he does have, because he's healthy, that's the main thing about this. He finally got a clean bill of health after a tournament. I am really excited about next year.
Carlos, this is way beyond my wildest expectation. Thursday and Friday were absolutely. I told my wife, I said, this is Tiger Woods of 2000. You know, he was swinging with confidence. He was walking with a strut. He was attacking pins. He was making putts. He was doing everything well. And I think I texted you at the time, the only thing now is his endurance, fitness, you know, and will he see some fatigue? And I think we might have seen just a little bit of that on Saturday morning. Maybe he lost maybe a little concentration there or something. You know, it was a little windy. Maybe things just got out of hand. But he righted the ship, and, you know, he played well the back 9. He played okay on Sunday. So, you know, doctors have cautioned him about over-practicing. So he's got to watch what he's doing a little bit. He can't put the hours and hours and hours on the range. And maybe that's a good thing. Maybe he was overdoing it before. Maybe if he does it more smartly now and really hone in on the stuff he needs to work on, maybe it's just as well he doesn't spend as much time and get away and have a life. So, I could not believe it. I think that he will contend in tournaments and majors. I really believe that now. I'm totally sold. So I'm bought in.
Hey, Fred, before you keep going on that, I just wanted to point out, I mean, Saturday was not only a bad round for him. He did have one of the worst at 75, but the best score on Saturday was a 70. So if you come to think about it, it was a bad round for all the players. Only three players scored 70, and from there on it was everybody 71 or more. So, I mean, even Justin Thomas was in form. He hit a 74 that day. We saw Dustin Johnson at 76, Henrik Stenson at 77. So it wasn't Tommy Fleetwood. That was what derailed him from having a chance as well. He hit at 74 on Saturday. So, I mean, I cannot falter him for that because everybody was having a bad day that day. But definitely, I mean, overall, it was a great outing, definitely.
Oh. Well, Ricky Fowler impressed everyone with his play on Sunday. He came into the final round in fifth place, seven shots behind the leader, Charlie Hoffman, who once again failed to convert a 54-hole lead. Ricky fired an 11 under par 61 to finish four shots clear of Hoffman for the win. He started fast with a nearly perfect nine holes of golf. He birdied the first seven, made a par at eight, and then birdied nine for an 8-under 28. Only one par, all birdies on the front nine. I mean, that was absolutely amazing. He had three more birdies on the back, got the nice trophy and the big check from host Tiger Woods at the end. Pretty nice week in paradise for Ricky Fowler. You know, how can you expect these guys to get excited to start the calendar year on the PGA Tour in Hawaii when they can play in an extra event like this one on an island paradise, much closer to Florida, where most of these guys have homes and collect million-dollar checks in this thing, and it's just a big party week in a beautiful paradise right there. I mean, why would you even fly clear to Hawaii when you can do this thing? No cut, make a big check. The ratings for the week were outstanding. This was nothing like a major or even a big PGA Tour event, but because Tiger Woods was making his return, he brought the TV ratings, plus the live streaming numbers. Round one of the Hero World Challenge delivered a 0.5 U.S. household rating, which was up 27% from last year. Had total audience delivery of almost 800,000, up 32%. On Thursday, Golf Channel was the number one cable sports network from 12:30 to 4:30. The 8.1 million live streaming minutes of round one alone would rank sixth compared to NBC Sports' full tournament four-day coverage of every 2017 PGA Tour event. That includes the Dell Match Play, the Tour Championship, and the Players. So people were watching, and I know you were saying you were going to watch live on your computer at work, and your guys in your office were doing the same thing. I'm sure there was a lot of that going on because the live streaming minutes were out of this world. For the final round on Sunday, NBC drew a 1.4 overnight for the final round of the Hero World Challenge. That figure is up 25% from the final round last year, which also saw the return of Woods, but he was not in the mix really on Sunday. Both those numbers are double the 0.7 in 2015 when Bubba won and the 0.8 for Jordan Spieth win in 2014. Woods did not play in either of those years, by the way. Just for comparison, Carlos, you're going to love this. The Auburn-Georgia SEC Championship game on Saturday drew an 8.4 versus golf's 1.4, okay? The NFL on CBS on Sunday afternoon at the same time as the Hero World Challenge drew a 9.8. The NFL drew nine times more than golf, you know. So that shows you, you know, what people are watching. Football, golf just cannot compete with football on TV. It just ain't going to happen. Carlos, I'm going to close out the Hero World Challenge part with a little thing about Hideki, because I know you love Hideki Matsuyama. And I don't think you saw the poor chip shot that Hideki hit. It was short. He chunked it. It went up one of those elevated greens. It hit up there. It started rolling back down the hill, and he inadvertently stepped on the divot that he had made as the ball rolled back down the hill towards that exact spot. Well, normally that's a penalty. You can't do that. I mean, we've seen guys get penalized for that. We saw the guy from Australia, long hair. I can't think of his name right now. Anyhow, he got penalized for that a couple years ago. He had a chip shot, stepped on his divot, and the ball rolled back down. You know, you can't do that under the old rules. But because of the introduction of the intent – into the rules, Matsuyama was able to say he did not intend to improve his forthcoming lie, and so he was not penalized, which is just amazes me. It should be a two-shot penalty. This is going to create problems. We're going to get into a major. We're going to get into a big tournament, and somebody's going to do that, and guys are not going to like it. This intent rule, this is not a good thing, Carlos. I don't know what you think about it, but I see problems coming down the road in this thing.
Oh man, I didn't see it. I came aware of it when we were preparing the outline for this, and you put it as part of the show. But definitely, he was clear of that because Mark Russell, like you said, he said that he didn't have any intent to improve, and he said he really wasn't even conscious that he did that. And I would believe, yeah, he might not have that, but had that ruling gone against him, he would have been penalized 2 strokes for the infraction and an additional 2 strokes for signing an incorrect card, which is similar to what Lexi Thompson was penalized, those 4 strokes at the ANA Inspiration earlier this year. So I know that the rule, it states that a player must not take action with the intent, and that's the key there. But like you say, that's subject to interpretation. And how can you make sure that, because I can say the same thing. No, it wasn't my intention. I did it. I didn't even know. So definitely I do see that there's going to be a problem. But after the officials reviewed that tape of the incident and Russell spoke with him, that's how it went. And right now all comes right down to what the participant tells the official, whether or not he meant to enhance that lie or not. They ask it in a sure manner, so it is what it is. I mean, not intent, only a response apparently by Hideki, and that's what I think we'll start to see moving forward.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I say, I just think it's fraught with problems. I see this intent on these rule changes. I'm leery of them. I'm very wary, so... Carlos, that's all I have for the that was a lot, really. I mean, for a silly season, basically an exhibition event, it became a big deal last week. It was almost like watching a major, really.
Yeah, I mean, if you could have seen. And the thing that struck with me the most is that yesterday I wanted to go out and see the major golf news outlets, and I started with GolfChannel.com, and yeah, Ricky Fowler was part of the headline photo with the trophy with Tiger, but if you saw all over the place, it was like 9 out of 10 different articles were about Tiger Woods. How about Ricky?
Yeah.
How about Ricky, who shot 11 under? Yeah. No, it was Tiger Woods. Yeah. He's healthy. What are we going to see in the future? Brandon Chambly saying, I'm sorry, I thought I was wrong about him. All kinds of sorts of Tiger Woods. So that's what we're going to be seeing, and that's what he brings to the table. And hopefully next year we'll get that kind of expectation. Certainly if he stays healthy. Oh, my, those ratings. The PGA Tour, I think, is in a prime position to do those negotiations for the TV ratings. I mean, TV transmissions and all that. But we'll see. Anyway, on the European Tour, there were 2 tournaments, but I'm going to talk about one right now, and that was the Afrasia Bank Mauritius Open, where South Africa's Dylan Fritelli came through a playoff against India's Arjun Atwal to win at the Heritage Golf Club, earning his second European title. The 27-year-old South African birdied the first extra hole to add further success to what has been already an excellent 2017. Fritelli finished 19th on the Race to Dubai standings, won in Austria, and was named European Tour Graduate of the Year at the start of this tournament week. Fritelli began the final round in Mauritius, one shot behind the 54-hole leaders, Atwal and Louis de Jager of South Africa, but he played some superb golf in testing conditions to take the control of the tournament through 14 holes. He stalled on the run for home, and when he failed to take advantage on the par 5 last, Atwal was given a lifeline. The 44-year-old Indian needed an eagle on the home hole to overtake Fratelli and win the tournament outright. He gave himself a chance with a brilliant second that left a 20-foot putt. His effort for the win narrowly missed, and the resulting birdie playoff was required to decide the tournament. The players went back to the 18th tee, and this time it was Atwal who was unable to take advantage of the par 5. Fratelli did make a birdie, and the victory was his. Atwal, who will be captaining his contingent on the upcoming Eurasia Cup, started the tournament with a superb 62 and was disappointed to miss out on that victory, but came out of it looking at all the positives in it. Frenchman Romain Langasque finished third. Luis de Jager, another of the 54-hole leaders, finished fourth. Mathieu Pavon and Miguel Tabuena finished fifth, tied for fifth. 2010 Open champion Louis Oosthuizen, who really was the only big name playing this tournament, looked totally out of the picture when just level par for the day through six holes on Sunday, but then he made four birdies and an eagle between the 7th and 14th holes to give himself a chance. But he fell away, though, with a triple bogey at the 16th and ended the week tied for 7th, five shots off the lead alongside Jose Felipe Lima. George Coetzee, Joel Stalter, Jan-Paul Strydom, and Aki Strydom rounded up the top 10 in a tie for 9th. Fratelli has enjoyed a fine year on the European Tour. He won the Lyonnais Open in June and then finished strongly. A tie for 2nd in the Turkish Airlines Open was followed by a tie for 4th in the TP World Tour Championship. Fred, this victory confirms that he's one of the on-form players in the golf world at this point. He has climbed all the way up to 55th in the official World Golf Rankings.
Yeah, Fratelli's somebody that we're gonna see more of. It seems he's had a very good year. That brings up one more point I forgot to mention. Did you see that with his finish, Tiger moved up 539 spots in the world rankings? It's still like number 550 something or whatever, but he moved up 500 spots. Hey, final LPGA Q School was held last week. 165 women from 31 different countries competed in the LPGA Q School held at LPGA International in Daytona Beach. NASA Hadaoka from Japan captured medalist honors at 12 under par for the five rounds. She was the model of consistency all week with rounds of 68, 71, 69, 69, 71. That's pretty nice, pretty consistent right there. Finishing just one shot behind the leader was Tiffany Chan, who becomes the first woman from Hong Kong to qualify for the LPGA. In all, 20 new fully exempt LPGA Tour cards were issued, 11 of whom have played on the LPGA Tour previously, plus 9 first-timers. The biggest move in the final round came from Cassidy Teare, who's from San Diego. She carded 5 straight birdies on her back nine to post 6 under 66. And moving up, she tied for 34th at 1 over after the third round to tie for 10th at 5 under par overall. Three ladies, Daniela Darquea from Ecuador, the lady from Thailand, and Maria Torres, an amateur from Puerto Rico, all finished tied for 20th at 200 par. Three-hole, three-player aggregate playoff was required to determine who got the last spot. Torres made birdie on number 10, the second playoff hole, to become the first Puerto Rican to make it to the LPGA. Carlos, you want to talk about Maria a little bit?
Of course I do. I mean, before this final stage of the LPGA qualifying school, Maria Torres of Puerto Rico, like you said, she said she wouldn't turn pro unless she finished on the top 20 because she's an amateur. And as you know, the top 20 finishes earn full membership, while those finishing 21st to 45th receive only conditional status. But you just said it, after the final 18 holes of that grueling 90-hole final stage there in Daytona, the recent University of Florida grad had hit it right on the number, coming in at 20, but it took 3 playoff holes because 2 other players were at 358. That was the only catch. She persevered and won to claim that. But the special thing about that is that grabbing that last available tour card would be an accomplishment for any player. But it was special for her because by doing so, she became, like you said, the first woman from Puerto Rico to get a full LPGA Tour card. I mean, that's big time down there that we haven't had many players in the guys do this. I mean, Chichi Rodriguez is the only one that has been in the PGA Tour. We've had other players try but not get a full card on the men's. So on the ladies, this accomplishment is even more impressive given that what she has been through in recent months. She lives in Trujillo Alto in Puerto Rico and was there when Hurricane Maria hit in September. Like majority of the people on the island, her family lost power. In the days following the storm, there was no internet connection at her home. So she had to go online to submit her payment for the second stage of Q School. She managed to find a signal at a faraway restaurant. That's how she signed up for the second stage. The next problem was getting her game ready for it, which is a challenging proposition given that the suffering many experience in the country. I mean, before Torres' situation at home and with her family stabilized, she had to practice in a park near her home because the local golf course is destroyed with the storm. And then how she can get out was another problem. All the people that you have heard that have been leaving the island at that first time, there were no flights going out. So eventually she got an airplane ticket, went to Florida to practice before competing in the second stage few school. There she finished T15 to move into the final stage. So, I mean, it was a struggle for her to just to even make it and to practice the way she did it and finally make it. That's what really makes it even bigger. And in Puerto Rico, this is a big deal. I mean, I know people are struggling back home, but all she could do there was her job for her and for her family because they have sacrificed a lot to allow her to be there and play golf. So congratulations to Maria. This is big coming from my home island there in Puerto Rico.
Well, Carlos, this story has a connection to me, actually, to Ohio. And I'm glad you pointed it out because I didn't know this. As you know, Ohio is the center of the golfing universe. So all good things that happen in golf have, you know, a tie in here. So number one, I have to ask you, do you know where Maria went to college?
She went to the she graduated from the University of Florida.
Absolutely. She's a Gator. That's exactly right. And she played golf there. Do you know who her golf coach was?
I knew this was coming somewhere. No, who it is?
Her golf coach is Emily Bostel Glazer, who is a young lady from my hometown. Her parents are very good friends of mine. They own a golf course there. Known him for a long time. And and matter of fact, Emily stated, "I can't think of anyone more deserving than Maria. Her work ethic is exceptional, better than most. She has a competitive nature that is rare and special, and the toughness she has built over the last 4 years has prepared her for this day. We're all excited to see her continue to grow and blossom into an outstanding professional golfer." So, Carlos, it's got an Ohio tie-in. I just had to let you know that, okay?
Yes.
Everything in golf comes.
Yeah, we have to be happy. I mean, it's from Puerto Rico, and it's her coach is from Ohio, so
absolutely,
it's great for us.
Absolutely. The women who finished 21st through 49th will all receive conditional status on the LPGA Tour, with Harang Lee, Allison Emery, Sakura Yokomini, Lauren Kim and Caitlin Submori all tying for 45th, so they take 45 and ties for that. Georgia Hall, we had been watching her. Even though she had one bad round, she still gets her LPGA Tour card. She, of course, was one of the European Solheim Cup stars and one of the leading players on the Ladies European Tour this year. She popped up on golf radars, leading the Ladies European Tour Order of Merit and finishing T3 in the Women's British Open held at King's Barnes. She had been the medalist in Stage 2 and finished final stage at 6 under par, tied with Amelia Lewis and Lauren Coughlin for 7th. Hall said, I think playing in the Solheim Cup for Europe and doing well at the British Open prepared me mentally for this week. I wouldn't like to do tour school more than once. I think once was enough. Even though 20 earned full tour status, a total of 49 earned conditional status for next season. 23 of those are considered rookies. In total, as I said, 31 countries are represented, there's 12 different nations that comprise the top 20. Carlos, looks like we've got a few new ladies to watch next year on the LPGA Tour.
Well, to be exact, we're going to have 31 because there were some 14 others that also classified through other means. But, of course, Georgia Hall is the one that has the big name there. Also from coming from the Symetra Tour money list, we have, of course, Nana Korsmats and also Yu Liu. So we'll see. I mean, it's going to be interesting. And as I always have said, on the beginning of the year, I will be naming the LPGA Rookie of the Year, as I have been doing. And I already have three names there that I'm starting to analyze, and I'll leave it at that. But at our first show in January, remember, I'm going to name who's going to be the LPGA Rookie of the Year, and it's going to be – no, I'm not going to say it now. Not yet. But anyway, just a tease. I could give the three names, but no, it wouldn't be fun. Anyway, to close up, let's talk about the PGA of Australia, where the Australian PGA Championship, the final tournament of the season, was being held. And there were times when Cameron Smith thought it was going to be his day before he finally clinched the Australian PGA Championship after two tenths play of holes. Like when a pinpoint approach hit the flagstick and bounced 10 meters away. Or when a rowdy fan was ejected for fake cups, sneezes, and heckles as he prepared for his approach on the 18th hole. But the unflappable and proud young Queenslander who stayed up late to watch his namesake lift the Rugby League World Cup trophy on Saturday hung tough to do the same in a tense Australian PGA Championship finale. The 24-year-old Smith engaged in a 20-hole skirmish with overnight leader Jordan Sunic on Sunday, overcoming a three-shot deficit to force a playoff and eventually win with a par on the second extra hole. I mean, Smith took the heckling on the 72nd hole like a boss instead of it, and I quote, "He just said a few nasty things. They are telling me not to choke. I tried to play it off. I guess he was from New South Wales." And of course, that was a funny thing because those are the Queenslanders' opponents. So that's, I think, a take that he had on him. He had earlier edge in front, a superb wedge approach over trees, giving him an eagle on the 17th and an outright lead for the first time. But a bogey on the last when he missed a putt from 2 meters, 6 feet. Gave Wallong, 25-year-old Sunic, a lifeline as both men finished 18 under. Both fired a repeat at the 18th with a superb chip, but then at the end, it was Smith who made no mistake the second time around to earn his first professional win in Australia and second overall to follow the Zurich Classic team's crown in New Orleans in May. He won nearly $240,000 and an exception on the European Tour until the end of next year, a bonus he admitted he was unaware of. But the Brisbane native and world number 86 said the biggest thing about winning was how it would help him attack next year's PGA Tour after bursting onto the scene with a fourth in his major debut at the 2015 U.S. Open. South Australia's Adam Bland completed a solid week of golf to finish one adrift of the leaders, while Mac Leishman searched with four late birdies to finish tied for fourth at 14-under with David Branson. It was a good outing for American Harold Varner III, who finished in solo sixth. Sean Crocker and Lucas Hayward followed tied for seventh. And Wade Ornsby, who won the Hong Kong Open 2 weeks ago and skipped the Emirates Australian Open, rounded up the top 10 in a tie for ninth with Nathan Kinsey. Masters champion from 2003, Mike Weird, finished T15, while the current Masters champion, Sergio Garcia, drifted with a 74 on Sunday to finish 6 under and 12 shots off the pace for a tie for 24th. other finishes. Matt Jones finished T30. Your guy, Fred Peter Sr., hover around the top of the leaderboard after opening with a 67. Yeah. But a 71, 74, and 72 relegated him to a T37. Thomas Dietrich, T45, and Chase Koepka, T50. Fred among the notable to miss a cut were Cameron Smith's partner while they won the Sear Classic, Jonas Blix, who had just finished second a week ago at the Australian Open, and Adam Scott, of whom I will be sharing some news in the final putts, and Robert Allenby, who was last at the time of the cut.
Peter Sr., he is my idol. I'm telling you, I love this guy. He's got to be like 75 years old or something, and he's still competing with these kids and getting it done. It's good stuff.
He's a senior. Yeah. He's a senior no matter what. And he's 58.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That wraps up the backspin, right?
That's right. And now let's move on to our four call or quick previews for this weekend's action. I'm going to go right away into the European Tour, where the Joburg Open will be played at the Rand Park Golf Club, the Firethorn Course in Johannesburg in South Africa. It's going to be from Thursday through Sunday. The defending champion is Darren Fichard. Right now, the race to Dubai leader is Wade Ormsby, but of course, this is very, very early. Dylan Fratelli, who won the Mauritius Open, will be playing this week and the next week in the Indonesian Masters as he makes his push to finish the year in the top 50 and getting to the Masters. Fratelli played at Texas and hold the winning shot when the Longhorns won the NCAA title at Riviera. So, of course, he wants to be there. This is the final tournament of the 2017 schedule on the European Tour before it takes a holiday break and returns in 5 weeks with the BMW South African Open, which will be January 11th to the 14th. This tournament was last played in February last season. The previous 11 tournaments were held at the Royal Johannesburg and Kensington Golf Club. Two-time winner Charles Schwartzel is not playing, but Louis Oosthuizen again will be the big name on the field, Fred.
There's going to be one more tournament in the United States. We've got, it's another one of these silly season things. The QBE Shark Shootout will be held this weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday in Naples, Florida at the Tiburon Golf Club. Greg Norman invites a few of his good friends from the PGA Tour, plus Lexi Thompson from the LPGA will be joining the fun with the guys this week and paired with another long hitter, Tony Finau. 12 two-man teams will make up the field in this team event, which features 15 of the top 50 ranked players in the world who have amassed 14 victories this past year. 8 past champions, including 2 winning teams, are also in the field, and 6 players will be competing in the $3.3 million event for the first time. The formats vary every day. Friday is a scramble. Saturday is a modified alternate shot. And Sunday is a better ball. The teams, Harris English and Matt Kuchar, won this event last year for the second time and will try to become the first team to win it 3 times. Brant Snedeker, Bubba Watson are paired together. Zach Johnson, Charlie Hoffman. I think that's a really good team to watch right there. I like that pairing. Hoffman's been playing so well. Johnson's always so steady. I look for them to be at the top of the leaderboard on Sunday. Daniel Berger, Gary Woodland, Jason Duffner, who we're going to talk more about, and Billy Horschel. Brian Harmon, Pat Perez, Russell Henley's with Kyle Stanley, Sean O'Hare's with Steve Stricker. That's another really good team if O'Hare is doing anything at all, because Strick's always so steady. Keegan Bradley and Brendan Steele, they have both been playing very well this year, so they would be a team to watch, and I think they are one of the past champions in this thing. Shane Lowry is playing with Graham McDowell, plus, as I mentioned, Tony Finau with Lexi Thompson is the lone man and woman team. The first 2 rounds will be broadcast on Golf Channel 1:30 to 4:30. Golf Channel will start the first hour of coverage on Sunday from 1 to 2, then NBC will pick up the coverage from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. Carlos, back to you.
And on the Ladies European Tour, Charlie Hall is hoping for a big finish to the 2017 at the Omega Dubai Ladies Classic a year on from suffering a near miss on the Ladies European Tour season finale. She had to settle for second spot in last year's event as Chan Chan Fong took the title with three-time Solheim Cup player returning to the Emirates Golf Club this week, chasing a first victory of the year. The 21-year-old has registered three top tens on the LPGA Tour this year, but is without a worldwide title since claiming the LPGA Tour's CME Group Tour Championship last November. Although Hall feels her game is in good shape, she has been grouped alongside Beth Allen and Ladies European Tour Order of Merit winner Georgia Hall, who has also secured full playing status on the LPGA Tour for next year. Hall progressed through the third and final stage of the qualifying last week at the LPGA International, like Fred said, regarding from an opening 77 to finish in a share of seventh and claim one of the 20 cards available for next year. And she'll be one of 1-800 women who will tee it off at the Majils Golf Course on Wednesday. This will be from Wednesday through Saturday. It will be marking the beginning of a new era there, with the tournament being renamed and also boasting a glitzy new piece of silverware. It was before known as the Omega Dubai Ladies Masters on the Ladies European Tour, but this 12th edition will see a new name as well as a new trophy. Like I said, it has been rebranded as the Omega Dubai Ladies Classic as part of a major overhaul, which really is part of what the Ladies European Tour is trying to do to try to revamp their tour somehow. Since its inception in 2016, this tournament was simply called the Dubai Ladies Masters until the title sponsors came on board in 2009. And keeping with the change, the trophy has also undergone a transformation, with it drawing inspiration from the iconic Dala, which is the Arabian coffee pot trophy that has come to symbolize the Omega Dubai Desert Classic, the men's event. So this new trophy is part of a brand redesign by the organizers, and that which has been beautifully crafted and expertly finished. Some of the players, others that you have to look for there, top players playing right now would be Holly Clyburn, will be part of that. Also, I.K. Kim is the top player in the world playing there. Jelly Ewart Shadoff is going to be playing. Clara Spilkova, Celine Boutier, who finished second on the Symetra Tour, is going to be here as well. Emily Christine Peterson, Nana Kuerts Madsen, Nicole Brock Larson. Also, you're going to see Pernilla Langberg. We see as well Camila Leonard, Beth Allen, like I mentioned, is going to be there. Florentina Parker, Laura Davies is going to be there as well. Katharina Matthew, and the Americans. Interesting, Angel Jin and Brittany Lincecum will also be part of the tournament, Fred.
Yeah, this tournament has a pretty good history. Some young American women have gone over there, and I think, didn't Lexi win her first professional event there? I mean, she won in Arkansas on the LPGA before she was a member, but I think she won over in Dubai before she won there, I believe. I think she got her first win over there. So it's a good tournament, and it has a really good feel. Carlos, we want to give a little tease also. I mentioned it earlier in the show, but next week will be our final show for 2017. And as always, we're going to do the year-end wrap-up. We're going to talk about the top 10 golf stories from all year. We're going to pick our players of the year. You're going to talk about some stuff, and we're just going to wrap up the whole year next year. And our good friend Kieran Clark is going to join us from Scotland to give us the European point of view on everything, and should be a good show, so you're not going to want to miss it. Also, Carlos, the Ohio Golf Journal offers golfaholics a diverse collection of topics that cover every area of golf. Tips to help your game, rules, explanations, equipment review, travel to the best golf resorts, history and opinion on current golf issues are covered every month. Ohio Golf Journal has some of the best golf writers that provide their knowledge on the game of golf. In the November issue, we talk about how the Amateur Golf Alliance is helping amateur golfers, the things golfaholics are thankful for. We feature golf travel opportunities to Bryant Park in Greensboro, North Carolina, and Reynolds Lake Oconee on the Georgia-South Carolina state line. Plus, Ed Travis proposes that arguments to roll back the golf ball are dangerously wrong. Visit OhioGolfJournal.com, click on the cover, and read the whole magazine or click on any article that catches your eye. You can also find more golf news and information on Back Nine Report TV. The latest Back Nine Report TV covers Inverness Club's renovation by Andrew Green, the theft of Charles Schwab Cup from Bernhard Langer. Fred Ridley begins a new era at Augusta National Golf Club, and technology is completely changing the face of golf forever. For a diverse take on the golf news, watch Back Nine Report TV on Roku. Carlos, back to you.
And just to clarify, I didn't want it to say for sure that Lexi Thompson's first win was there. It wasn't. It was her second win. In 2011, she won her first time in the Navistar LPGA Classic, but that was in September. And then in December, she won the Dubai Ladies Masters.
Okay. I knew it was at the beginning.
She did win it, but it was the second. I just wanted to make sure. After that, she didn't win again until 2013 when she won the Sime Darby LPGA Malaysia. And by the way, that first win at the Navistar PGA Classic was by 5 strokes, and the Dubai Ladies Masters by 4. So she won big time those first 2 tournaments for her.
And well, that's when, you know, they wouldn't, when Juan wouldn't give her a membership because she was too young. And so she just went ahead and won the tournament and said, nah, no problem, I can win without membership. No big deal. You're going to have to give it to me now, though.
I'll make everybody else look bad. So I'll win by 5
exactly.
or 4.
I'll show you.
I'll show you. With that, we wrap up our 4-call quick previews for this weekend's action. Now let's go to our Par 5 news when we have 5 great news to take pieces of news to give you. And the first one is about one Rory McIlroy. Is that the name? Rory McIlroy, right?
You remember him. You remember him? Kid from Northern Ireland, plays a little golf. You remember him?
Yeah.
Curly, dark curly hair. He can play a little bit, yeah. Everyone knows that Rory McIlroy had less than a stellar year in 2017 due to nagging injuries that hampered him. He only competed in 14 events on the PGA Tour last year, earning a paltry $2.4 million. And finished 58th in the FedEx Cup. He didn't even make the Tour Championship, the final event of the year. He didn't fare any better in Europe either. In 5 starts at the European sanctioned events he entered, Rory registered 0 wins, his best being 2 runners-up. Plus, he missed cuts at both the Scottish and Irish Opens, of which he's the host, so that was poor form. The injuries caused him to take several weeks away from the game when he wasn't allowed to even practice. After missing out on the Tour Championship, he decided to completely shut it down for the rest of the year and start anew in January, trying to get completely healthy. Another big loss for Rory last year involved a bookkeeping transaction for tax purposes. He's showing a pre-tax loss of, wait for it, $105.4 million. The paper loss stems from a non-cash write-down of $99 million in the value of McIlroy's lifetime image rights. The figures show revenues of Rory McIlroy Management Services, RMMSL, last year totaled $21.7 million. Revenues at the company declined by 15% from $25 million to the $21. RMMS Limited own and manage Rory's lifetime image rights. Each year, the directors review the value of these rights. The value the directors assign fluctuates in line with changes in Rory's operating environment, and that income levels were in line with expectations. He didn't make as much money. I think he still gets that big check from Nike every year, though. I think that's a pretty nice check he gets. The firm's cash did increase from $3.8 million to $6.7 million. Now that's the accountant that I want, Carlos. That's pretty good math. Show a loss of $105 million for the year, but you grow the cash by $3 million. I want that guy for my accountant, okay? I want him to find $3 million for me. The company had a book value of $400 million on McIlroy's image rights at the start of 2015 and was reduced to $280 million at the end of 2016. Things are tough all over. Aren't you glad? Can you imagine explaining a $105 million loss to your wife? Honey, you know, I just lost $105 million last year. No worries. You know, they're not going to come take the house or anything. Although Rory's income took a hit in 2017, his philanthropic efforts are continuing at a rapid pace. Through his Rory Foundation and the Mary Peters Trust, Rory has been arranging to speed up access to diagnosis, treatment, and rehabilitation, enabling injury-hit young sportsmen and women to get back to competitive action as soon as possible. Their joint athlete diagnosis clinic, in conjunction with the Ulster Independent Clinic in Belfast, has helped young stars from a variety of sports, including boxing, fencing, squash, tennis, and athletics, get back to their sports quickly. I think Rory's going to be okay financially, Carlos, even though he's showing a tax loss for the year, and his outside donations are on track, and they are helping a lot of people. So good for Rory. He's doing good, and that was just a bookkeeping deal, so I don't think it's anything to be worried about.
Yeah, there's nothing to worry about. I mean, we all know where his heart lies at, and that's not him, definitely. Hey, Bridgestone's Corpse, 12-year run as a sponsor of a World Golf Championships event at Akron's Firestone Country Club may be coming to an end after the 2018 event, according to Golf Insider John Feinstein. The 2018 Bridgestone Invitational, part of the PGA Tour's WGCs, will celebrate 65 years of professional golf in Akron during the August 2-5 event. But Mr. Feinstein, who is a best-selling author and contributor to the Golf Channel and PGA Tour Radio, recently reported on his PGA Tour Radio show, A Good Walk Spoiled, that at the moment, when the tour rearranges its schedule for the 2018-19 season, there might not be a Bridgestone Invitational at Firestone, a club whose history with pro golf dates back to the Robert City Open in 1954. Mr. Feinstein said multiple sources have told him that because the PGA wants the FedEx Cup playoffs to end before Labor Day, there are several other scheduling changes that must take place. The tour announced the two biggest in August, which was the PGA Championship moving to the beginning and to the will be moved beginning in 2019 to May, and the Players' Championship will be contested in March. According to Mr. Feinstein, FedEx Corp, who is the title sponsor for the four playoff events that determine the season-long PGA champion, wants its annual tournament in Memphis, the St. Jude Classic, to be a WGC event. If the sponsor gets his wish, Mr. Feinstein said the plan is to move it to Akron spot in August. The corresponding domino effect, according to the writer and media personalities, that Bridgestone, who's headquartered in Tokyo, wants to have an event in Japan. That tournament, Mr. Feinstein said, would be added to the Asian Swing on the fall calendar. Paul Oakley, who's the vice president of communication for Bridgestone Americas, said the company's in talks with the PGA Tour about their official marketing partnership and the Bridgestone Invitational. He added that the company can't comment on current negotiations and that it has a great relationship with the PGA Tour dating back 12 years, but that doesn't mean that it will stay in Akron. That partnership began with the Bridgestone Invitational in 2016, a tournament that was prior to that called the NEC Invitational. You know, that uncertainty surrounding the future of this tournament has led to talk related to the event's impact on local organizations and neighbors. The impact to local charities would be huge. About $27 million have been raised for local organizations since 1984, according to the Northern Ohio Golf Charities. In 2016, 38 organizations split more than $1 million raised through the professional golf event. The yearly event also has become a way for local residents to make some money, parking the cars outside of their homes as golf fans want to make their way to the Firestone Country Club. Take, for example, about 3 months ago, Peggy Page, a retired math teacher, was enjoying another year of nearly 30 parking cars outside her house during the Bridgestone Invitational. She said that through the whole 4 days, she might have made over $1,000. I mean, thousands have also spent years working as volunteers, but Fred, Everyone now has been left wondering whether 2018 will be the last time there will be action there at the Akron Firestone Country Club.
Well, Carlos, there's a lot of plot twists with this thing. There's a lot of things involved here. Being here in Ohio, I kind of keep a close eye on this. But, you know, of course, Bridgestone is a Japanese company. And first of all, you've got the PGA Tour wanting to contract the season as much ahead of football season as possible. And so, you know, we're moving the PGA Championship to May. We're moving the Players back to March. Some things are going to have to get pushed away. Is the Bridgestone, is the Firestone tournament one of those things? Second item is that this Quicken Loans, who is owned by Dan Gilbert, who's really from Detroit but also owns the Cleveland Cavaliers, pulled, you know, their sponsorship of Tiger's event in Philadelphia over the 4th of July weekend. Could he be, because his arm be twisted along with, say, LeBron James, to put the money up or to come up with the sponsorship to keep a tournament at Firestone? So that's a possibility. Gilbert was rumored to be trying to get the Quicken Loans tournament moved to Detroit. But, you know, maybe if that doesn't work, maybe he'll settle on Firestone. I don't know. So there's a lot of stuff involved in this. But like you say, the people that really get hurt are the people that volunteer, the people that the charities that are involved that get over $1 million a year that's generated by the tournament that goes to their funds to help fund all the great work that they do. So there's a lot of stuff that's affected by a golf tournament every year, Carlos. And that thing's been there for 65 years, or a tournament's been in Akron for 65 years, so it'd be a shame to see it leave. Hey, these are the kind of things I love to talk about, you know, that. We got another little Twitter spat between guys. I love this stuff. Social media. Don't you just love social media? What did we do before we had Facebook and Twitter, Carlos? I don't know what the hell we did. Billy Horschel had taken umbrage with Brandel Chamblee last week. We talked about for comments about another tour player and Chamblee not spending time on the range with the pros, only talking about them from watching tape and sitting up in his TV booth and not mixing down with the players. This week, Chamblee blocked Jason Duffner on Twitter. They had a back and forth between Duffner and Chamblee, which resulted in Brandel just blocking him. Boom. Out. You're out of here. The outcome of that blockage just made Duffner's day. He just went off then on Twitter. He posted a whole bunch of stuff. One of the things was, quote, best part of my day. When people aren't educated in what they are saying, they run and hide from the truth. It's to keep what they have going and not be exposed for being a fraud. That was Jason's tweet talking about Chamblee. Chamblee responded, Twitter often brings out the worst in people, but one should consider there is no age limit to be on this forum, and profane language is generally uncalled for. I have no beef with Duff. He can carry on doing this thing, and we should all pardon reciprocally frailty as it exists in us. Well, part of the deal, other people that were responding were starting to use foul language, and Chamblee took exception to that. And so he tried to get out of the conversation, but they wouldn't let him. They kept pulling him in. Evidently, Chamblee had taken a jab at Duffner's instructor, Chuck Cook, at a seminar, followed by a side Twitter conversation where Chamblee was included against his will. As I mentioned, he wanted no part of the Twitter discussion, but was unable to get Duffner's friends to exclude him, so he just hit the block button. You're out of here. After the blockage, Duffner went on a Twitter campaign extolling the virtues of being blocked by the former tour pro and golf analyst. I have to admit, Duffner seems a bit childish in all this at best in this whole deal, and maybe some people just should not be on social media channels. Remember, kiddies, think twice and hit the delete button once before you send stuff a lot of times. But, you know, think about it before you actually send it. In another surprise move involving Brandel Chamblee, he admitted he was wrong about Tiger Woods being able to be competitive in a return to the PGA Tour. after Tiger's impressive showing last week at the Hero World Challenge. Chambly has long disagreed with Tiger's propensity for changing teachers and golf swings. He especially found it difficult to believe that Woods' return this year would be any different than last year's fiasco of missed chips and wild drives. I have to admit there were more people surprised over Woods' excellent play at the Bahamas, and now the expectations for the 14-time major winner will be off the charts for next year, just like we already talked about, Carlos.
Brandel Chambly in a controversial fight? No, that.
Yeah, can you imagine? Controversial?
No.
Can't we all just get along?
No, but I agree with you. I mean, I think Jason Duffner really shouldn't have gone that way. I think
pretty
he
childish.
Took it a little over the top there. Yeah. No need for that. But anyway, let's talk about controversy. No, Phil Mickelson is not controversial. I mean, he's one of the least controversial people, at least in golf, right? But he has his caddy for next year, and lo and behold, she shows a guy who grew up under the same roof as him. Tim Mickelson, former golf coach at Arizona State, was his older brother's interim replacement when Phil and Jim Bones McKay split in June after 25 years of working together. At the time, Lefty said he would utilize his brother on a short-term basis until the end of the year before deciding on a full-time caddy. And now, Tim will be on the back full-time. Of course, the other domino to fall in this was Tim's job as an agent at Lagardère Sports, where he was managing the career of one of the game's hot young superstars, world number four John Rahm, his former star at ASU. But going forward, Rahm's management team at Lagardère will comprise Steve Loy, who's Phil's longtime manager and president of the company, U.S.-based player manager Jeff Koski, and European-based manager Jamie Evans. So Tim will transition from searching for new talent to searching for those occasional errant drives that his long-hitting World Golf Hall of Fame brother will hit. Phil said Friday in a phone interview, and I quote, "The last 4 months or 5 months have been so much fun, and I've enjoyed having Tim work with me so much. He's a really good caddy. He knows my game very well. He knows what I do and what I should do. This is a big year, a Ryder Cup year, and I'm really looking forward to 2018. End of quote. You know, with Phil enthused about the progress of his game, gunning for a 2018 Ryder Cup spot and seeking his first PGA Tour victory since the Open Championship at Muirfield in 2013, it will be a nice day for the entire family the next time he holds aloft the trophy. Fred Mickelson said he plans to play 5 events in a row, starting with the Career Builder Tournament, followed by the Farmers Insurance Open, Waste Management Phoenix Open, AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am, and the Genesis Open at Riviera. So he'll be pretty busy.
Carlos, I tripped across this last story, and I found it kind of intriguing. In a recent study posted in the International Journal of Golf Science, entitled "Evaluation of Near versus Far Target Visual Focus Strategies with Breaking Putts," boy, that grips you, doesn't it? I mean, it makes you want to sit and read this. It's a page turner. Two researchers contest that looking up is better than keeping your head down when putting, like Jordan Spieth does sometimes, you know, looking at the cup. The purpose of this study was to compare near target and far target visual focus strategies during the stroke on breaking putts. The ball was considered the near target, and the far target was the point across the target line closest to the hole. 20 golfers' results were used, and they completed an equal number of putts using 3 independent variables and putts of 6 feet, 10 feet, and 14 feet. The far target method had a significantly higher make percentage, 40%, in comparison with the near target. These findings suggest that a far target visual strategy, or looking at the hole, could be effective for golfers on breaking putts inside 14 feet. These two gentlemen have been the only researchers to demonstrate that the far target strategy resulted in improved performance. It's always held before that looking at the ball through the stroke is the accepted method. Other researchers have studied the effect of looking at the ball versus looking at the hole on breaking putts, and none had arrived at the same conclusion. The purpose of this study was to compare near and far target visual focus strategies during the execution of the putting stroke, which we've talked about. Anyway, when you boil this all down, they hypothesized that a far target visual focus strategy, or looking directly at the hole while stroking the putt, has a higher putting success rate than previous research suggests. The technique provides golfers with more timely information for imparting the intended initial speed to the ball without negatively impacting the intended line. So, as we all know in putting, the line and the speed are the two main factors. So what they're saying is that it's easier to get the speed right if you're looking at the target or the hole rather than just looking at the ball. So Jordan Spieth's habit of looking at the hole when putting has some merit, and you have something new to work on during the winter, Carlos, with your putter in your living room.
And with that, we wrap up our Par 5 news. And now we're going to have our VIG, very important guest of the week. His name is Mike Fay. He will be talking about winter golf fitness, Boyne Golf Academy, and how to keep your game sharp this winter. He's one of the leading PGA golf instructors in the country. He's the director of instruction at Boyne Highlands Golf Club Academy, and is a leader using gears and TrackMan to improve your golf game. Boyne is covered with snow this time of year, but Mike and his teaching partner, David McWhorter, are ready to book teaching and fitness sessions in the warmth and comfort of the Boyne Academy. Ski in the morning and get a golf lesson in the afternoon. What could be better, Fred?
Oh, man, in Petoskey, that area up there is beautiful. Stay at the inn in Bay Harbor. It's only about a 15-minute drive up to Boyne Highlands. Oh, it's good stuff up there, Carlos. I may have to go up there myself, not in the near future. So, yeah, let's hear it. We had a nice discussion.
Let's play it.
We are very happy to be talking with Mike Fay, PGA professional and director of instruction at Boyne Highlands Resort in Petoskey, Michigan. Mike, you know we love it up there, and we love coming up and seeing you. Welcome to the show.
How you doing, Fred?
Well, I'm probably doing better than you because I know there's snow on the ground up there, and skiers are shushing about in northern Michigan. But you're still busy in the Boyne Training Academy, right?
We are at the Golf Academy here. We train players year-round. In fact, a lot of times I think that the wintertime is where we get a lot more done than even in the summertime. With our season so short, the work that we put in over the wintertime really pays off when we take it on the golf course, you know, in the summer and working out all these kinks and stuff that we have in our golf swings are a lot easier to do, I think, in the wintertime. In the summertime, we want to play better, learn how to score better and take our games to the next level. But how do you get there? And that it's a process, definitely, to learn and get better.
And what a better way. The Boyne properties are beautiful, of course, up there in northern Michigan. But, you know, you've got two different skiing areas there. You got Dubs Dread. You got the mountain over there. You can ski in the morning, come over to your place, over to the academy, get a lesson in the afternoon or vice versa. I mean, what could be better? You get the best of both worlds.
Right, yeah, we do that a lot. People come over and visit us, on a daily basis over here, and we put them on an online coaching system where they always have a coach with them even when they go back home. So it's pretty neat like that. Give them their own specialized programs that they need to work on and get themselves better, whether it be fitness or things that they're doing with the golf swing or both, helping them out.
Mike, I've been up there and spent some time with you and David, and we did the gears analysis. Tell Tell our listeners a little bit about Gears and what it entails.
Yeah, Gears is absolutely fantastic. It's the same technology they use to make the famous movies like Avatar and all the kids' video games to make the players and actors more realistic, because, to be honest, it is you. It's our 3D motion capture system that we have. We have a room that has 8 cameras in it, and you put the sensors all over your body, and you step in the room, and all of a sudden it's pretty neat. You know, you're in the computer, and we can see so many different things in 3D than we ever could with 2D with video. So it measures a lot of different things that we work on. In the wintertime, especially, we're working on flexibility, how much you can turn, how much you're moving. And then also with our club fitting, it has really helped us fit players better, along with TrackMan there, and being able to measure certain things that the golf club is doing, what you're doing to the club, what the golf club is doing, and trying to get you to hit it more on the center of the club face with a lot more speed. It's been pretty neat to see players get a lot better, not just with their bodies, but with equipment, getting their swings better. So it's a neat system. I know you were on it, Fred.
From a personal standpoint, Mike, and I told you this, I came up last spring. We spent some time, 3 days up there working on some stuff. And right away, looking at the Gears, I could not believe some of the bad habits that I'd fallen into and didn't even realize it. It was just amazing. You know, due to, you know, some things that hurt, and you change your swing, and over time it just gets worse, and you don't know it. And I have to tell you that I've had as much fun playing golf this summer from the work we did last spring than I've had for a long, long time. I'm really enjoying the game a lot more, and a lot of that is due to the work that we did on Gears last spring. But, Mike, one of the things we want to talk about a little bit, too, is that most golfers don't get to play much golf over the winter, but there's still a few things they could be doing in their home or their garage or whatever to improve their game for next spring. What are some of the things that you tell your students maybe to work on, thickness or flexibility or some of those kind of things?
Yeah, flexibility is a big deal, right, Fred? Especially us up in the north, where we're not getting outside as much to exercise, and being able to be more flexible is a huge thing to everyone. And, you know, one thing that during the NFL month, I kind of have a rule with all my players that during the commercials, they're not allowed to watch the commercials, and they have to get on the floor and do some stretching during the commercials. And it's amazing the things that they say after they get done with watching a football game, for instance. I mean, just small little things all the time make a huge difference. Things that we do indoors, tons of drills with furniture, things like that. It doesn't have to be this huge workout thing, but once we identify, like what we work on with you, some of the things that we think that you need to, you know, become more flexible, more mobile, stronger with your body, makes a huge difference to what you can do with a golf club next summer. And so that's what we put together for people. You know, getting out and being mobile is a huge deal. Not just flexibility, but getting out, doing some bike riding, you know, on the bike, stationary bikes. Weightlifting is a big deal, too. That's something that we talked about as well, is getting strong. You have to get strong, especially as we get older. We start to lose muscle mass. We have to get stronger. So lifting weights is so important to becoming more fit, and flexibility too, because that allows your muscles to move better. Put on some muscle and get more flexible, and keep continuously doing that. And then you see a huge difference next summer in your golf game. You're going to be playing a lot better just because you're in better shape yourself.
That is so true. As I've gotten older, I realize I have to do stretching. I have to do some flexibility stuff. And I've really been dedicated to doing that over the last year and a half or so. And it has made a difference. I feel better, and I'm able to turn better and make a more confident golf swing. So, Mike, we want to talk a little bit about the properties there at Boyne. As I mentioned, there are three in the Petoskey area. There's, of course, the Bay Harbor Inn, that is just, it offers the finest in lodging, dining, and accommodations. They're all first class. Plus, there's 3 9-hole courses that provide some of the most scenic and challenging golf in northern Michigan at the Bay Harbor Golf Club. And then don't forget Cricket Tree that sits high above the inn and has another 18 holes of golf that offer fantastic views of Little Traverse Bay. You've got the Boyne Mountain that has, the largest and most ski runs of any resort in the Midwest. And then in the summer, there's 2 18-hole golf courses there to provide golfing fun in the summer. So, and then, which I think is probably, well, I love staying in the Bay Harbor Inn, but your place for the golf courses, I think, is fantastic. You've got 4 18-hole championship courses there, the Ross, the Hills, the Moor, and the Heather, all designed by top golf architects, as well as your golf academy there at Boyne Highlands. So you got 10 golf courses, first-class accommodations, the golf academy, beautiful vistas over Little Traverse Bay. Plus, you got all that retail and dining and all that stuff in Petoskey. It's just the perfect place for a summer golf trip, right, Mike?
Yes, it is. Yeah, we're booking up right now for golf schools and tee times and groups and things like that for next summer. It's a fantastic place to live. It's a great place up here, and coming to visit, I mean, I did as a kid. That was one of the reasons why we wanted to come here. I mean, you have Bay Harbor that's right on Lake Michigan. I mean, you can't beat it. It's absolutely gorgeous over there. And the mountain with the 2 totally different golf courses that play down the backside of the mountain there. And Deer Lake, which is beautiful as well. You can have dinner there at the beach house. Here at the Highlands, you've got 4 golf courses right here, plus our academy. We do coach, though, at the mountain and at Bay Harbor as well. We've got golf schools going there, too, but the hub is here at the Highlands, and that's where we coach in the wintertime where we have our indoor facility. But, not uncommon to have January, February, have 3 feet of snow outside of the academy, and I'll be posting pictures that we're getting a lot of work done here at the golf academy. So pretty neat.
Yeah, Boyne has properties all over the North American continent. We're talking about 3 of them here that are located around Petoskey, Michigan, and northern Michigan, Boyne Highlands, Bay Harbor Inn, and Boyne Mountain. Mike, we've been talking with the Director of Instruction at Boyne Highlands, Mike Fay, a longtime PGA professional, one of the best professionals in the country as far as I'm concerned. So log on to the Boyne Resorts, find the resort that's right for you, and maybe stop up and see Mike this winter yet. Get on the gears, get a lesson, learn how to get fit, get a little more flexible for next spring. Right, Mike?
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Fred.
Good talking to you, Mike.
You too.
There you have it. That was our VAG Very Important Guest of the Week, Mike Fay, who's one of the leading PGA golf instructors in the country, Director of Instruction there at the Boyne Highlands Golf Academy. Fred, any other... anything else you want to add before we close the VAG?
No, just the fact that you can find Mike. He's on Twitter at Mike Fay Golf. He'd love to hear your comments or any questions that you might have. He loves to talk golf. You can also find him on Facebook, Mike Fay, F-A-Y. Look him up, and if you're ever up in the northern Michigan territories, stop by Boyne Highlands and say hi to Mike and maybe book a lesson with him. He is... he's worth the price, I guarantee it.
And with that, we wrap up our VIG, Very Important Guest of the Week, Mike Fay. And now, let's move to our practice ranger. Every week, Fred and I pick a topic, and each one of us get our own shots added. This week, we are close. I mean, it's how much? 20 days until Christmas?
20 days.
It's right there.
Yeah.
20 days.
Yeah.
It's around the corner. I know that because it's closed, but the Masters, I wish it could be here tomorrow. I wish that, but no, let me not use that wish as one of my wishes in my Christmas gifts. So we're going to be talking. I mean, I get it, trying to find the best golf gift idea for anybody, like me, Fred, or any other golfer. in your family can be really difficult. So we're going to narrow it down for you. I mean, there are thousands of different golf products out there. And if you listen to the marketing, they're all touting themselves as the latest and the greatest. But most of them aren't very good. But, you know, luckily we have used some of them. We review them, and we know what we want. So, Fred, what are your Christmas wishes for gifts this year?
Carlos, I got to tell you, I've got probably about half of my Christmas shopping already done. And I want to tell you, that is really rare. I'm one of these guys that usually waits until Christmas Eve to even start thinking about that kind of thing. But for some reason, I'm on it early this year. I'm getting it done. It's unbelievable. And so, Carlos, you know, everyone always tells me that Christmas is a time for giving. But I've always felt it was much better to receive than to give, actually. So with that in mind, here is my list of golf items that's on my Christmas wishes this year. Number one, I'm kind of an old school guy, so I still don't really have a rangefinder.
I do not have one.
I do not. I would like to have one. Yeah. I'm not going to really use it on the course, I don't think, that much. I actually have a little golf buddy thing that I just push a button and it just tells me the yardage to the middle of the green. So I don't really take any time. When I walk up to my ball, I can just hit a button and it spouts it out what it is, and it, you know, fine. I just hit a shot up. But what I need the rangefinder for, Carlos, is when I'm doing lessons and we're out on the range and I'm trying to find the exact yardage to a pin or a marker on the range that day because they've moved, you know, the ropes or whatever, and we're working on wedges or short game or something, it would be nice to be able to scope that instead of just walk it off. I pretty much have an idea of what it is, but it would be nice to shoot that and tell the student exactly what it is. So it doesn't have to be anything too fancy. And if you're looking for your favorite golfer, there's Bushnell, there's Golf Buddy, there's Leica. There's several different brands. All of them are acceptable. There's different features with some that make them more expensive than others. Golf Buddy, for example, has rangefinders for as low as $150 if you want to look at them, and they'll do just fine for what you want. The other good thing about a rangefinder, Carlos, that is difficult for me is when you're playing a golf course you don't know, and there's hazards, and you know you can visually see that you can't carry that hazard. There's no reason taking it on, but you're guessing at what yardage to lay up. And on a golf course, you don't know. So it would be nice maybe to have that rangefinder when you could shoot that right then and see what it is to that hazard, whether it's a bunker or water or whatever, to know where to lay up and what your layup yardage is. So that would be the reason I'd want a rangefinder. If you are a big spender and want to give the very best to your favorite golfer, top models can cost over $500 if you want to spend that much. But you don't have to spend that much. They're much less expensive. I also need a new golf bag. The golf bag I have is really nice, but I've had it for about 10 years. It just needs to be replaced. There are actually a couple on my wish list. I need a bigger bag to stuff all my extra golf balls, rain gear, tees, and golf needs, so I can throw that stuff in there, especially when I'm traveling or going on a trip and you got to take all this crap with you. Especially when you go on a plane and you got to throw it all in a carry bag and you got to, you know, put all that stuff in there so you got it. But I have also taken a vow to walk more in 2018. I've actually started that this year. And so a nice light carry bag would be good also. And I don't know if you've seen these, Carlos, but if you haven't, you need to look these up. The McKenzie bags, they are very, very cool. Each McKenzie golf bag is crafted by skilled artisans, one at a time, to the exacting specifications You can get it custom made. I mean, you can get your logo on there. They can be leather. They can be old canvas type, like they used in olden days. I mean, they're just really, really cool. I've seen a couple of them that guys have. They can be very expensive. They can be well over $1,000. But this is for the guy that's very particular, wants something very cool, a little different than what the other guy has. If you're looking, if you've got an unlimited budget and you want to buy somebody something really cool, a McKenzie golf bag would be the, I would recommend that highly. That is very, very neat. You can find them at McKenzieGolfBags.com. That's M-A-C-K-E-N-Z-I-E GolfBags.com, just like Dr. Alistair McKenzie. One can never have enough golf shirts, Carlos. I have a closet full. I particularly like the Antigua brand for the best in golfing apparel. One can never go wrong with Antigua. Several touring professionals, including LPGA star Stacy Lewis, wear and promote the Antigua brand. Antigua sets the bar for functional as well as fashionable golf wear. They are also a leader in men's golf fashion. Their polos are designed with extensive range of trend-driven chest stripes and solids. The line includes spandex to maximize strength, comfort, and playability. Also, you can show off those big pecs, Carlos, if you get them nice and tight and you can all stretch over there, you know, make you look good. They have all the latest trends and fashions and can be found in pro shops around the country. To view a complete catalog of Antigua fashion wear, visit A-N-T-I-G-U-A, Antigua.com. Another really good thing, another really great gift for golfers, you know, and if you're a wife that's at home and your husband comes home from playing, or maybe you're the wife is the golfer and she's coming home and she's constantly complaining, oh, I missed a shot, and oh, I missed a couple putts, or I can't chip. Well, you know, let's get a driving range membership. Let's get some gift certificates or get a membership to a driving range or possibly even a simulator for the winter months. Up here in the north, we can't play outside, but we got here in Toledo, we got golf simulators there. You can go in there and hit chips. You can hit full shots. You can work on you can see your spin rate, your launch angle, you know, your ball speed, all that stuff. You can get all those numbers, maybe help you improve. So I would like a gift certificate to a golf simulator or even a driving range. Those make great stuff. Another thing is a gift certificate, which will, again, help your favorite golfer improve for a club fitting. I just know I could take several strokes off my handicap next year if I had new sticks custom made and fit, especially for me. And, Carlos, there's several ways to get a great club fitting. First, you visit your local pro and ask him if he uses TrackMan or FlightScope to properly fit your clubs. Or, second, club fitting specialists are sprouting up around the country that provide excellent club fitting services, like PGA Superstores offer club fitting, as well as several other golf retailers. There's a new Club Champion opening up in Cleveland right here. We got another one opening up, just opened up in Detroit. So Club Champion offers club fitting. So those are great, great places. So a gift certificate to one of those golf fitter places, that would be very good. I do have a word of caution. If you're buying a certificate, try and choose a club fitter that's not just trying to push one brand rather than trying to match the right head, shaft, weight, and balance for you. You may not know that offhand, but maybe check with some other golfers that you know in the area who they might recommend to give you the best golf fitting in your area. And then finally, Carlos, I'm going to wrap this up with what I want. Are some more golf lessons. You know, I've been playing this game for about 50 years. And as I mentioned in that interview, I've had very few lessons over my life. I've had a couple guys that have pointed some things out. Believe it or not, the best lessons I've ever received in my life are from my son, because he knows my game better than anybody else in the world. And he can see immediately when I'm doing stuff wrong. And so I usually don't listen to too many people when they try and tell me stuff, but I have listened to my son, and he's helped me along the years. But working with Mike Fay last spring, last May, he helped me hit the ball better and enjoy the game more this year than any time in the last 10 years. So it just shows you're never too old to learn new things, and I learned much from Mike. Find a qualified teaching professional. Instead of spending $500 on that new driver, spend some of it on golf lessons and really help yourself. It's not the driver. It's not the club. It might be the guy holding them. And maybe if you had some lessons and learned how to do it correctly, you might not need to spend $500 on that new driver, Carlos. So there's my list. Hopefully those help some people. If they're out there listening and wondering what to get their favorite golfaholic for Christmas, there's some really good – that's the things that I would like, and I'm sure your favorite golfer would like them too.
They're very nice, and I knew yours because you send them to me. So I wanted a golf range, a range finder, so I'm not going to include it in mine. So you took that thunder away from me. But it was surprising that you finally are giving into the technology and the range finder, even for helping you give classes. I mean, I'm amazed. I'm very proud that you're giving into technology that way. So,
I can do video too, Carlos. I don't like to do video for lessons, but if I have a student that requests video, I can do it. I just don't like to do it. Okay, so I can adapt to technology. I just don't like to.
Okay. I mean, pretty soon I'll see you now vouching for faster play in golf. I see it down the line.
Yeah.
But anyway, let's. Yeah, go ahead. What?
No, that was done.
Okay. Yeah, well, I'm going to go with mine. And first of all, I want to, you know, there are plenty of GPS devices, but what Garmin has come out with right now is the easiest to use on the links, okay? Garmin has been knocking out golf GPS watches before the phrase wearable tech even existed. And the latest model, which is the Approcha 60, looks like being the heaviest hitting or maybe longest driving race-based golf tech so far. I mean, already you know Garmin with the GPS, but you already got a vast array of dedicated golf watches to choose from, as well as activity watches with its impressive on-course golf technology built in. But the Approach S60 takes a somewhat different approach by being a golf watch front and center with some activity tracking and sports training modes in the background at the same time. I mean, it comes preloaded with more than 41,000 courses from around the world, so it can provide the user with precise yardage to the green. You don't need a rangefinder, see? Hazards and dog legs with the help of a full-color course map. And, of course, you can expect to work in the sun for it. The display is a 1.2-inch sunlight-readable color touch screen, and when you pair it with Garmin's True Swing Golf Analyzer, I mean, the Approcha 60 can also track your swing speed and club path angles. Along with all its golf features, you can also get smart notifications on your S60 for incoming calls, texts, emails, and other alerts. So who wouldn't want that? I don't need anything else. I'll just use that.
You are a techno weenie. Listen to all that stuff.
Of course. That's what I am. And my second one. I mean, this second one is one of the devices I may have been most impressed this year. It's called the Swing Caddy 2. It's a personal lunch monitor. Have you ever been to a club fitting where they hooked you up to a TrackMan or similar device to track all the facets of your golf swing? Yeah. You know, those cost upwards of $20,000 easily. But the Swing Caddy 2 uses the same general technology, which is Doppler radar, sits behind you on the range and tells you exactly how far every shot is. It costs a fraction of the price, but still works surprisingly well. It even has a built-in training game to make your time on the range more enjoyable. So, and who is this for? Any person who wants to practice more, but usually gets too bored to make any progress and doesn't want to spend the money on a TrackMan or something like that. Who is this in for? Any person who has no interest in practicing. This is practice. Talk about practice, this is for it. And what a better, smaller device than this to track
every single aspect. It will give you the swing speed, the ball speed, the smash factor, I mean, everything, the loft angle, the club that you're using, everything. The voice caddy is there, the swing caddy too. I love that one. Also, I used this one to practice not long ago. I mean, after I saw that, you know, Jordan Spieth uses it, Tiger Woods is using it again. I want a new putter. And I saw the 2016 Scotty Cameron Select Newport 2. The putter is a good, if unremarkable, version of the Classic Answer 2. The main complaint that has been always leveled against Scotty Cameron is that he's more of a marketer than a maker. But his description of his latest putter certainly doesn't do anything to quiet his criticism. So when you see the Select Newport 2 through the paces to see if it lives up to its lengthy list of features it comes with, yes, it does. I mean, there are two ways to look at the Scotty Cameron Select Newport 2. I mean, on one hand, well, there's nothing here, but it's a basic Answer 2 style putter with the face insert, sole plate, and cherry bombs in the cavity that we've seen from him before. But in the other hand, Cameron has made another attractive version of this classic shape. I mean, the proportions are correct and the amount of branding and engraving, it's just about right. Not boring, but not over the top. And then when you test it, I mean, when you play it, the impact sound is surprisingly loud. This is especially unexpected given how dead the Newport sounds and feels. Even with a tour quality ball, there's a tuck at impact. Also surprising for a putter with this kind of a price tag is the lack of feedback. But, you know, whether you strike the ball perfectly or way out on the toe, the sound will be virtually identical. I mean, a serious golfer will appreciate this putter's balance and alignment options. It just feels good to use, too. I mean, show it off before the round. And even if your short game is awful, your playing partners won't know until you hit the first green, so go get it. I mean, you'll look good at it. And also, another one. You know that you were saying about the simulators there and all that because of the cold stuff there and the cold weather in the northern states. I have another one for you. You don't even have to leave your house. You can go with the Aguila Golf Virtual Reality Golf Trainer. Is great for the off-season. I mean, this is a virtual reality mental game trainer that uses your phone for an immersive on-course experience, and the program includes visualization training, lessons, and everything needed to get that wintertime golf fix. I mean, you can do a virtual reality immersive learning. You can bring the course experience to your living room through an ultra-realistic virtual reality experience. It really trains your brain to play the greatest game. You have advanced visualization. You practice not only basic, but advanced tactics, which includes draws and fades. It includes that, and only with your phone. Advanced visualization-focused technology reduces time to retention. The mental game training that it comes with also improves your mental, your decision-making and mental toughness through our configurable training elements that you can customize based on skill, handicap, or weakness. It doesn't matter what your handicap is. This is a great training aid. I mean, you can actively track your stats, apply the rules of the game. I mean, you don't lose those hard end strokes gained by misinterpreting regulations or breaking a rule. I mean, learn not only the granular rules of the game, but also apply them to your performance and understand the impact they have on your next shot. And like I said, you can learn lessons of the game from the very best, attain key techniques, retain invaluable strategies. And my last one, this one I want to include you, Fred, because I want every golfer's dream is a trip to Scotland and Ireland to play golf over the historic old courses where the legends have played. I mean, I have to go there, and I would like for you to go so we can go play with Kieran. I mean, I would like to go there. I saw one of the trips there that it's a 9 nights there. You go to Glasgow on Sunday, play Prestwick on Monday, then you play Western Galles, you play Lake Carnoustie, you play the new course at St. Andrews, you play the old course. So it would be incredible to play there in Scotland and Ireland. So that would be,
it's always been one of my dreams, and I wish it could be as soon as possible. Those are mine.
I'm in. I'm in. Count me in. I'm ready.
Those are good ones, Carlos, but I see a lot of technology in there. You are the ultimate tech guy, and you are all about the tech. So, you know what? That's a pretty good list. We've kind of given two different perspectives there. So if our listeners can't find something there to buy their favorite golfer, then they're just not trying.
They should go then to Top Golf or something else.
There you go.
That would be their approach. And with this, we wrap up our practice range for every week. Fred and I pick a topic. This week, we gave you 11 different options of gifts that you can give there, from the anything from high tech to anything else that can help you all around the golf world to help you there find any gift for your loved one, your favorite golfer. Now let's go to our final putts. I'm going to start talking about former world number one, Adam Scott, who went back to using a long putter after this past weekend's Australian PGA Championship. He famously won the 2013 Masters using a long putter and reached the Summit of Golf official World Golf Rankings using one in 2014. But, however, anchoring him was banned at the start of 2016, and since then, Scott has struggled to regain his world-beating form. He has been using standard length putter with the claw grip in recent times, but he has now gone back to a longer putter with the same style used so successfully by a guy that seems to have some kind of a good play there in the Champions Tour. His name is Bernhard Langer. Scott has been inspired by him as well as his Champions Tour rival Scotty McCarron, who is a six-time winner on the over 50 circuit and won his first senior major this year using a long putter. Scott has fallen from 7th to 31st this year in the official World Golf Rankings, last won the WGC Cadillac Championship in March 2016, so it's going to be almost 2 years pretty soon for him. He opened the Australia PGA with a round of 1 under par, leaving him tied for 41st place and 5 shots off the lead, but after an even par second round, missed the cut by 1 shot. So we'll see how it goes once he really gets reacquainted properly with his long putt after this long time. And on my final putt, you know, people usually get married in England and take their honeymoon to the tropics. Tommy Fleetwood is doing it the other way around. Fleetwood won the race to Dubai on the European Tour 2 weeks ago and married Claire Craig today in the Bahamas. Just don't get the idea this was always the plan. Fleetwood had every reason to skip the Hero World Challenge, an 18-man field that is only official in the world rankings points in offers. He has played the last 5 weeks in Shanghai, Turkey, South Africa, Dubai, and Hong Kong. So why didn't he take this week off? Well, he said last Wednesday that he and his fiancée said that if they got into the tournament, it would be a great place to get married. And since he did, he planned the wedding for Tuesday. So missing the tournament wasn't real an option. He had to go. His fiancée was his former fiancée, now his wife, is also his manager. They celebrated the birth of their first child, Franklin, in late September, which was why he took some time off and really had to come back late for the race to Dubai again, and he's just getting into form back again. And now what he's going to do for the honeymoon? Well, he said, I want to go home. I've been away a long time. So he's going back, Fred, to England now, and Fleetwood, who is number 18 in the world, plans to spend more time on the PGA Tour next year with a schedule built around the majors and the WGCs and an eye towards making his first Ryder Cup team. I think he's a lock to make.
Yeah, we're going to see. Tommy had a great year. I think he's finally hitting his stride. It's always a transition, though, playing more in the U.S. for the European guys. So hope it works out for him, and hope he has a good year next year. And congratulations on getting married. Just real quick, Carlos, there's going to be a new book out in May by Jeff Benedict and Armin Katian that's going to be about Tiger Woods. It's going to be pretty long, 150,000 words. The rumor is that they're going to address Tiger's PED usage. You know, there's a topic that's whispered about, but nobody has ever dared
shouted out in public. So looking forward to that book. Peyton Manning has a little more time on his hands to play golf this year, and the practice is showing. He made a hole-in-one at Cherry Hills. Jeff Overton, a player on the PGA Tour. There's a video on Twitter of Jeff sinking a full court 94-foot putt in an Indiana basketball game that won a foursome, a four-day trip to Myrtle Beach. So that was kind of cool. Mike Kaiser finally got what he wanted with a $4 million improvement to the small airport close to Sand Valley in Wisconsin. Speaking of Mike Kaiser, his partner in Cabot Cliffs and Cabot Links in Nova Scotia announced last week additions to their high-end golf resort. If you build it, they will come, you know. Cabot Links has plans to add a short course and a third championship course at their Nova Scotia location. And finally, we've been talking last couple weeks about the shorter golf ball issue. Jim Nugent had a an excellent article in yesterday's Global Golf Post. I quote from that: "I firmly believe the USGA and the RNA have the best interests of the game at heart. As 2017 winds down, there's a lot of conversation out there about rollback, bifurcations, or whatever you want to term the coming change. It is today, however, a solution in search of an undefined problem." Carlos, that wraps up the Back Nine Report for December 5th, 2017. Be sure and listen next week for the 2017 year-end wrap-up with our good buddy Kern Clark.
Can't wait for that. And now, that wraps up another week of the Back Nine Report. Thank you for listening. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Special thanks to our VIG, very important guest of the week, Mike Fay. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. here, Eastern Time, here on Blog Talk Radio. Or if you missed it, check it out on iTunes or tune in. Also, Roku TV. And if you haven't done so, follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is at Back9Report with the number 9 in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres. Along with Fred Alvader, we wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Este es el sonido de una niña al ver su nueva sonrisa por primera vez en el espejo. Infórmate cómo puedes cambiar la vida de un niño con una hendidura. Visita operationsmile.org ahora.